Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Show and our January transfer window update. On today's show, we're going to discuss Chelsea's growing side of players who like to play wide, Man United removing their number nine doubt with their new man, Wout, that spice around Declan Rice, Tottenham's sorrow in trying to get Porro, and much, 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 much more. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, a man who would never tape a Nokia cell phone to the back of a TV set, I don't think, Taylor Rockwell.
I wouldn't, but man, that was some like video game level treachery there. I appreciate Graham sharing with us that was it during BBC? Was it during Match of the Day? Whatever yeah. It was, the cell phone playing sex noises as Gary Lineker tried to talk to Alan Shearer was terrific.
Yeah, yeah, so they dealt with it very well. On you go, Ryan. Explain what happened.
Yeah, so this was it halftime, Graham? Before
the match.
It was before the match. Wolves and Liverpool's FA Cup replay. They're in studio. They're live on air, and there is an inappropriate noise coming out of the broadcast, and it transpires. Someone had taped a rogue phone to the back of the studio, set its ringtone to the said noise, and then rung it during the broadcast. And as you say, Graham, I think Gary Lineker did handle it well. He handed off to Alan Shearer, and he did well.
He did do very well. I did question why they didn't cut away from the studio earlier. Why didn't they just go to Shearer? Because obviously he didn't have the noise. But I did enjoy how for the whole broadcast, including halftime, they just blamed Danny Murphy. That was the end joke for the whole broadcast. And then Shearer ended it with something. I'm paraphrasing slightly. He ended it with a line. You know how he always has a sign off, Ryan, on Match of the Day, or anyone who's seen Match of the Day. He ended it with a match that was decided by a screamer, and it wasn't the only one we had on the show tonight.
Hello. Also joining us on this podcast, you just heard his voice, a man who sleeps 3 hours a night due to watching soccer in Australian Open, but still looks fresher than Graham Potter. It's our Graham Ruffin.
That's a low bar. Hello, Ryan Bailey. Yeah, I don't think I look particularly fresh at the moment. One thing I will say about Graham Potter is he doesn't have a jank spot on his chin, which is proof of my lack of sleep at the moment. Maybe that's coming for Graham Potter a little bit later on. But yes, not a great deal of sleep at the moment for me.
I have questions. First of all, is chin how you pronounce it in Scotland and you had to Americanize it for us?
You got a spot on my chin!
And then second of all, why does a spot on the chin indicate that you are sleep deprived? Like, the bags on bags under my eyes tells me that I'm sleep deprived. You get a spot on your chin, that's it? I don't know about this, Graham. I get
bad skin. I get outbreaks when I've not slept a lot. And I was halfway to saying cheek, because that is actually where it is if you look here. Okay. And then I changed it to chin halfway through.
Stories changing.
Yeah, sure. Chin.
Stories changing. Yeah. I don't know about this.
When you don't sleep much, Graham, you probably have a poor diet. They're probably interrelated in some way,
yes.
I'd imagine.
Indeed, even worse than usual.
Yep. Rounding out our pack, of course, a man with an excellent diet who gets his 8 hours minimum. Our man in Arizona. He loves that soccer's now on HBO Max, mixing up his Thrones with his soccer's. Joe Lowry, hello.
Yes, I have HBO Max. That is something that I own, and I certainly am not happy about Telemundo getting the Spanish language U.S. soccer TV rights deal. No, so much has happened in this show already. I'm not even sure where to start. I don't think there's anywhere I can go from here other than to say, man, this is going to be a good show. This is going to be a good show, folks.
That's the minimum bar we set around here, Joseph, of course. But it had me thinking, now that HBO Max does have soccer, it seems like every streaming app does. Apple's got it now coming to. TV is very fractured in these various subscription plans we have to have in the US. And I'm just getting more and more confused. Every time I sit down to watch a game, I have to fire up a webpage to see which streaming service this game is on. And it's getting worse and worse, Joe.
What if, and now go with me on this, I know this is weird. What if we combined like Peacock and Apple TV Plus,
yeah,
and HBO Max and Amazon Prime Video. What if we just combined all of them and then you could like flip through them? Almost like channels, but it's not channel, but almost
with,
like channels.
With ad breaks, and then you pay a monthly subscription, and you put a satellite on the side of your house.
Yeah. We call it directly going into your home, so we call it like direct something, like direct TV, something like that.
No, yeah. That's too on the nose. That won't work. But I mean, generally speaking, I think we're there.
You all are making here. I need you to stop before Jeff Bezos and whoever heads Apple hear this and are just like, yes, this is the idea. We'll own all of the media and then it will be great and we won't control everything. Joe, stop.
Yeah. This feels like we can't give ideas to FIFA as well. Like we can't give ideas to any of these people.
Yeah. I look forward to the press release from FIFA tomorrow saying Apple Cop Prime Max Plus coming soon.
Yep.
And if FIFA is involved, I don't think we've talked about this story. We know that they will be involved because we'll just have random shots to Gianni Infantino, not on his phone,
of
emphasizing
not.
That. That was a crazy story that Gianni Infantino insisted that he be shown at every single game he attended, with the caveat that he never be on his phone in coverage. Mm-hmm. And then when he was, somebody got in trouble. That is real close to dictator status right there for me.
Why did he not want to be shown on his phone?
I was wondering that too, Graham.
A preemptive strike to ward against the match of the day sex noise? Was that the idea?
I'm hoping it's that. My guess is that he is so frequently on his phone and cares so little about the games being played that if they cut to him multiple times and he was always on his phone, quickly there would be a running joke of Gianni Infantino, the president of FIFA, not actually caring about the World Cup games.
I think that's exactly it. His PR person notes that he's always on his phone, so they didn't want it to become a thing that he doesn't actually watch the games. So.
He's a big TikTok guy.
Big. Well, he's doing the FIFA Roblox game is what he's doing, right?
Yes, perfect, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, Roblox, thing I know about. Just like Joe knows about HBO Max.
Clearly.
Everyone is an expert around here. By the way, some housekeeping. Taylor, on yesterday's podcast, you said you wanted to A, your cues, A, everybody's cues, and I instantly went and had a shower after that. I think everybody else felt the same way. So thank you for introducing that into our lexicon.
I almost made it worse in the beginning of the show by describing the physical reaction that Jeff Bezos would have to the idea of securing every single media company. But I don't think anybody needs to picture that, even though I'm now leading us down that road right now.
Indeed. Well, I'll tell you what, Tay-Tay, Chelsea aren't A-ing very many Q's at the moment. They're bringing up more Q's than A's, I would suggest. Having spent over half a billion dollars, and still being mid-table this season, Patrick Vieira, Taylor, said words to the effect of, it's bad for soccer, that what Chelsea are doing. I don't know if it is. It's bad for them. It's good for every other club who's, you know, they're basically investing in all these Premier League clubs and Champions League rivals at the moment, and they're creating a spectacle. Is it bad? I'm not sure.
This is a weird trend all of a sudden that everybody is very concerned about the spending habits of the Premier League itself and then the top clubs in the Premier League. I think it was Agnelli, the former Juve director, talking about how we need to reform soccer because the Premier League was taking too much money. That done been happening, y'all. But I do think in this case, Chelsea are really taking it to the next level between the deals that they are offering, the transfer fees they are paying, but then the length of those deals. Mudryk is, 8.5 years if they exercise that 1 year option, but 7.5 guaranteed. I understand why we're doing it, why they're doing it, rather. Well, I'm sure we'll get into it, but still, the amount of money that they are guaranteeing and then guaranteeing to the player makes me wonder if they're going to be having to pull some levers down the road. But for now, it's going to be fascinating and also maybe chaotic at the same time.
Okay. Joe, why don't we get into who I assume is their latest signing at the time of recording, Mikhailo Mudryk. How does he fit into this team as a left winger? He's got some competition in his position, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's not. The depth chart for Chelsea is not clear right now. Trying to build a depth chart as well under Graham Potter has been difficult because the shape has changed so much from match to match, and Graham Potter is trying to help his team learn to be tactically flexible. It's safe to say that hasn't gone all that well so far. I do think if Chelsea stick with him, things will get better, but I don't know how much, and so there are difficulties here. I don't know what to make, really, of this Chelsea situation right now. I know you guys did the big thing on that last week. It is complicated and things are messy. Mudryk, though, looking specifically at him, Ryan, you said it. I think he fits on the left wing. That's where he's been playing for Shakhtar. That is, I think, the spot that allows him to best use his combination of speed and dribbling ability. You could certainly play him on the right as well. But this guy is a winger. He'll drift into the half spaces. He'll drift centrally at times. But he is someone you want out wide to maximize the number of times he's going to drive at someone 1v1 or even 1v2. Because I think he's good enough and fast enough to do that. When you watch Mudryk play, he has Kylian Mbappe speed. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. He is that fast. He is electric to watch. So, I'd expect to see him out wide. It's difficult for Graham Potter to fit in all of the pieces around him, but I think you can do it. And we'll talk more about maybe how this Chelsea team could look at full strength going forward when we talk about João Félix momentarily. But, Ryan, I think you said it, essentially. On the left wing, I don't think you play him really anywhere else, frankly.
Graham, your thoughts on this move? And obviously Arsenal were in for him as well, and they'll be disappointed, I imagine, that they no longer get someone with 90s curtains joining them.
It's a strong look, isn't it? It is an iconic look that Mikhailo Mudryk has. Yeah, at this point, I'm pretty sure Chelsea don't have a scouting department. They've just taped a phone to the back of a sofa in Arsenal's scouting department, and they're just copying Arsenal's homework. In terms of Mudryk as a signing, he is a very talented individual. I've watched them, I think, 5 times this season. I mentioned that on a show earlier this season. For whatever reason, Scottish teams seem to be drawn against Ukrainian teams quite often, so I watched them against Celtic for Shakhtar Donetsk. He played 3 times against Scotland. He looks like the real deal. He looks very dangerous. I can envisage how he would fit into this Chelsea team, as Joe mentions on that left side. He's got pace. I think he brings something different to that Chelsea team. But the other factors are the fee is incredible, 100 million euros. I believe 25 million euros of that is going to is a donation to the Ukrainian, some sort of Ukrainian war fund, which I guess is a plot twist I didn't really see coming when the Abramovich, that whole episode was happening, Chelsea aiding the fight against Russia. But then, as Taylor mentions, the length of the contract is absolutely... It seems insane to me. Maybe this is the way football goes and this ages poorly in 2 years from now. Everyone's handing out 7-year and 8-year contracts. But it seems like a giant, giant gamble for Chelsea. And there are financial fair play reasons why they're doing that. And in terms of Arsenal, you're right, Ryan. They spent months lining up this deal. It looked like Mudryk was the only player they were interested in for this transfer window. So it's certainly a blow that not only have they missed out on him, but he's gone to one of their biggest rivals. I think there's something admirable about a club having conviction in their own value of a player, though, and standing by it. And Mudryk undoubtedly would have strengthened Arsenal's squad, and maybe we can talk a little bit later on about how they do need more players in those attacking positions, but they're not willing to hinder their summer transfer activity, and it seemed like that was a factor. I think The Athletic reported that yes, Arsenal could have paid the money to get Mudryk, but it would mean that their summer would be more difficult, and they're just not willing to compromise their development in that way. So I kind of admire Arsenal for holding firm in their valuation and not getting into the bidding war with Chelsea.
Graham, I agree with you on that. The thing, though, is, you know, Arsenal could win the title this year. Like, this is where I come back and wonder, as a general principle, I think it's good not to spend money that you don't feel is good to spend, right? It's good not to spend $10, $20, $30 million more on a player who you think is worth $10, $20, $30 million less than what you're going to have to pay for him. That's good business. But at the same time, this could be Arsenal's year. And do we think realistically that coming into next year, they're automatic title favorites, even with Mudryk? I kind of doubt it. So this is the year for me that I think you have to push, and maybe that will come through other moves in the window that we have yet to see unfold yet. It seems like there's a lot of other discussion around Arsenal right now, so maybe that will come. But this is the time, I think, if you're Arsenal, that you do sort of bend and maybe even break your own rule, because who's to say you're going to be back in this spot, you know, X number of points clear at the top of the table in a year from now?
I've got some concerns about this one. Graham, I'm glad that you are hyped and you have watched him more than I have, but from the two games I have actually seen him in combined with the Y Scout footage I watched, I think he is a very good dribbler. I think he's very speedy, but I also think he's going to be frustrating for Chelsea in the way some of their wingers are frustrating. I think he takes heavy touches sometimes when he's dribbling. I think he tries to do too much on occasion. He draws a lot of fouls, but I think we'll also get dispossessed. And in that way, I think going to Chelsea, we might not see the best of him. I think at Arsenal, we would have seen a next level evolution of his game, because he's going to a team that is settled with a manager that has an idea of how he wants his team to play, very specific idea. So training is going to reflect that. His development will reflect that. And I think that is a little bit of a loss for a player who was obviously publicly courting that move to Arsenal, wanted to go there. Chelsea, I think when they knew this deal was going to happen, had to start kind of putting out feelers, making sure everybody wasn't going to be too mean to him about the public courting of Arsenal. And in his kind of promo footage, or in the kind of still shots of him with the Chelsea stuff, still sort of looks like, this isn't an Arsenal shirt? I'm confused. Like, he has a little bit of a befuddled look on his face. So maybe that's because he was ready to go to a title challenger and develop his game, and now he's going to chaos. I think he will end up being a good player for them, but there are so many players now in that attacking lineup, or potentially in that attacking lineup. Obviously, they've got some injuries to deal with, Christian Pulisic chief amongst them in my mind. But Matt Law tweeted, "By my reckoning, Chelsea have an entire team of forwards either permanently at the club, due to join, loaned in or loaned out. That would be Mudrik, Nkunku, Felix, Sterling, Havertz, Pulisic, Ziyech, Aubameyang, Broha, Lukaku, and Hudson-Odoi. This is unsustainable. They also bid for Noni." So I think that means they are going to clear out this summer. It gets harder to clear out when you're giving out 7.5-year deals, 6-year deals, 8-year deals, whatever they may be. And I know the goal there is to amortize the length of the, or the transfer fee over the length of that deal, so it's less of a financial hit right away. But it still means that you're going to have a ton of players who, if you're not able to sell on, are going to be on pretty high wages, because Chelsea can pay high wages. And so you're going to end up with a Barca situation of a bunch of guys who don't want to move because no one else is going to pay me £150,000 a week. And I don't know how they kind of keep that going long term without having a financial fair play hit.
Obviously, we generally focus on, when we're talking about attackers at Chelsea who might need to be cleared out, we focus on Christian Pulisic, understandably so. Have Chelsea forgotten they signed Raheem Sterling? That's the one that I think, what is the plan for Raheem Sterling? I mean, if the plan was for him to start on the left, now Mudrik's been signed to play there. And Kuku, I would presume, is going to play through the middle as he has for Leipzig. So Sterling's not going to play there. Felix, I don't know where he fits in, and maybe we're going to talk about that a little bit more. Is the plan for him to be on the right and then Reece James overlap? Is that maybe where Sterling fits in? But I would say Sterling and Felix are very different players in the way they play that position. So I don't know what the plan is for Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, I mean, Graham, I did speculate previously, and I think we came to the consensus that maybe they'd forgotten they'd signed Nkunku already, and so maybe they've also forgotten they signed Raheem Sterling. I think Sterling has picked up injuries here and there this season. Pulisic is going to be out, so maybe the idea is just we need depth, and then we will figure it out from there. Maybe there are some players who aren't working in the positions they're in, and so they want to try to experiment and move some people around. I have those same concerns and those same issues because I could see a lot of people being pretty dissatisfied in this Chelsea squad. But Graham Potter also has proven himself capable of developing talent and getting people to play together cohesively at his former club, less so at Chelsea these days. So it's going to be interesting, as we've already said. I still don't quite know if these moves make them better in the areas they need to improve.
It's not boring, that's for sure, Taylor.
This is true.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about João Felix. And also, we're going to talk a bit about Weghorst at Man United. Plenty more to come. Stick with us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. We are talking about the done deals so far here on the Total Soccer Show podcast, and we're still with Chelsea. João Felix, Taylor Rockwell, has his hand up. Wants to talk about João Felix.
I actually just got really excited because in the break, Ryan was making sure that the Nkunku deal was done because it's, a handshake agreement that will happen in the summer. I am now obsessed with the idea of Arsenal coming in and hijacking deal for Nkunku the way Chelsea hijacked the Mudryk deal. Well, I mean, if it's not done, I think Arsenal should have a go that way. Because also Nkunku at Arsenal is pretty exciting. Let's see if they can make something happen. They've also made it clear now that they have the money because they almost offered the same. I think they offered the same amount of money with roughly the same incentives, but Chelsea's were just like, make 5 appearances and you get 10 million more.
I know how they do it. They do it Batman style or Bane style. When the plane's coming over from Germany, Arsenal have a plane fly on top of it and hijack it and sort of take the people out of it, like Bane, you know, like the whole Bane thing.
I don't know who they leave in the plane to show that it actually happens. So maybe one player has to be sacrificed. Hopefully not. It probably is. Let's talk João Félix, though. A move that still has me confused. It's really hilarious to me. Maybe not hilarious, but I find it very funny that the narrative was Atleti were holding out for a loan fee of, I think, 20 million euros. And then Chelsea were able to get him for 11 million euros plus his wages, which I think puts it at around 14 or 15 million euros. And at that point, what a bargain seems to have been the narrative from Chelsea. Yeah. And I love that 6 months for 14 million, that's the bargain that Chelsea were going for. But in he comes and immediately gets a red card. I also really enjoy the narrative that that Chelsea felt like they needed to go for Mudryk because they saw the impact that João Félix had in those 48 minutes and they thought, we need to keep spicing it up, we need to keep shaking it up. Left off the fact that he got that straight red and is suspended for 3 games.
Taylor, the best narrative from Chelsea fans watching the game was, he was the best player on the pitch before he got the red card. I was like, so?
Yes. And then he comically got a red card. Like, that was, if you need the definition of a straight red, that tackle is it. So, probably not the debut he was looking for, I'm guessing.
Oh, dear. So, Taylor, do you want to have a crack? Joe, why don't you have a crack at where Félix can actually fit into this team then? It's a second striker situation, presumably.
Yeah, it is. And I alluded to earlier how I think Potter could get all of these really shiny puzzle pieces into a shiny puzzle. Raheem Sterling and some of the other options do complicate this, but I think that is depth options at this point. When you pay this much for players, I think you're looking at Kai Havertz as a number 9, João Félix as a number 10, sort of off the right side, and then you're looking at Mudryk as a left winger. So you've got Félix almost as a pseudo right winger drifting inside. You have Mudryk on the left, and then Mason Mount, who I think is a key component of this Chelsea team, as sort of a free 8, and I think this team then looks best in basically what becomes a 4-3-3. It won't look like that in possession because I mentioned Félix drifting inside, Mudryk will stay wider. But I do think you can get these players on, and you need depth as well. If you want to compete in the Premier League, you need high-quality players, right? You need Man City levels of depth if you want to win the title. So I, in some ways, don't hate this signing. The loan fee is there. But at the same time, I was reading through an Athletic piece, and one of the commenters I thought had a really great point. So this was Ash in one of the comments sections about this signing for João Félix over in an Athletic article said, if you work out transfer fees for top players, this is effectively what people pay for half a season. If you sign an $80 million player on a 5-year deal, you're effectively paying $8 million for half a season for their service. I thought that was a very interesting way to frame this financial discussion. Wait,
but then you also get to sell that player.
That was my point. You've got an asset then, but is that just wages that Ash is talking about or what?
So
what is that accounting?
I think that's talking about then splitting up the transfer fee into, you know, however much you're going to have that player, however long you're going to have that player.
This is the buy versus lease argument here.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's true. But in soccer, transfer fees are so volatile. And if João Félix doesn't succeed and you've paid $80 million for him and you're trying to sell him for $40 million, that's a difficulty as well. So,
okay.
I mean, there are considerations here. I'm just saying it is not like maybe this horrific piece of business that we've talked about it as, that I've joked about. I think there is some value here. I also think João Félix is a great player. I think he's a phenomenal player, and I do think Chelsea could be a place where he really does shine. I actually do put credence in. He's on the field for 55 minutes or whatever it was and looked really good and then made a stupid choice. You know, you don't love to see that, obviously, but he's a phenomenal player. I think he does clearly make Chelsea better, and I think we've really dramatized how financially foolish this move is.
I'm excited to see him in the Premier League. I kind of wish he had gone to another club that isn't quite in the chaos that Chelsea is in right now. But nonetheless, I think Chelsea could be a reasonable fit for him for all the reasons that Joe outlines there. But I do think there is a disconnect between this idea that Chelsea are building for the long term and they've got a project manager in the form of Graham Potter, and they're spending big money on young players, and they're not going to have to do this for another 10 years. And then João Félix is completely and utterly a short-term solution. And he may be a great short-term solution. He did look good in that Fulham game. And he does give Potter, I think this is one of the key points and the key aspects of his signing, he gives Potter a great deal of tactical flexibility. He can play on that right side. He could even play in a kind of midfield unit. I guess he can play as a up front through the middle, but not as a conventional centre forward. He can play off the left. So Potter needs that from his squad. He doesn't have a great deal of it at the moment, and Félix will offer him that. But the short-termism feels jarring when everything else at Chelsea is being billed as this is for the long term.
Here's what I get confused by. Like, first of all, Joe, three different times in this show talking about Chelsea, you have ended a statement with a question. So you've been like, Chelsea will get better.
I don't hate this signing.
There is some value here. And I think all of that, like, I agree with both of you. But, like, I think the reason why I am negative on this move, maybe more negative than others might be, is for what Graham just laid out there, that, like, Félix can do a lot of different things. I don't know if he can be that striker that they need. And that has been my criticism of Chelsea, is these signings will make them better, I think, in certain areas, but not in the areas I think that they need to be strengthening. Mm-hmm. Center midfield, having more creativity there, and a striker up top who can do the things that Graham Potter wants that striker to do. Maybe it's Félix, but if it's not, is it Aubameyang? Is it Fofana? Broja's injured. So I that's where I sort of don't quite get this move, because it feels like another sort of mercurial player who wants to play wide or wants to play off of a center forward that they still don't have. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe this comes good, but that remains my concern.
I think Kai Havertz is that guy for me. And maybe he's not that guy for Graham Potter, but I think Kai Havertz could be a phenomenal number nine. Maybe this is me channeling Ryan's World Cup predictions. Wasn't there a World Cup prediction about Kai Havertz in there, Ryan, about him scoring? Maybe it was a Euros prediction.
No.
Oh, okay, right. That tells the listeners everything they need to know. I think Kai Havertz is a guy you can play off of and have as a focal point. I think he could really round into being a phenomenal, well-rounded, that's a poor expression now, but well-rounded number nine. And then I think the pieces do sort of fit around him. It won't be Félix next year. Most likely it'll be Nkunku instead. So I kind of like what Chelsea are shaping up into. I mean, it feels weird to say because I know no one else agrees with me, right? But I kind of like what Chelsea are turning into. They do just very clearly need help in central midfield, and that is where I would have spent money first over these other moves, but it seems like money is no problem for Todd. So I would be shocked if they don't bring in a big money central midfielder in this window too, because I think it's very clear to a lot of folks that's where the squad really needs strengthening.
There is a scenario that I see where you're coming from, Joan. There is a scenario where we get to the summer or the start of next season and we're looking at this Chelsea team and it looks pretty good. Yeah. I mean, if they were able to get Félix on a permanent deal, which feels, I know there's not an obligation to buy, there's not an option to buy, but Atletico Madrid may be open to that, given how his career there has gone, and it feels like there's going to be quite a bit of upheaval at Atletico Madrid in the summer. So maybe he ends up at Chelsea permanently regardless. If they have a front line of Mudryk and Cuckoo and Félix, and then they find that central midfielder, and you then factor in the defensive additions they've made, that's a pretty strong team on paper. And if they manage to clear out that squad, then there is a scenario where I think Chelsea are looking pretty good for the start of next season. But right now, it is a little bit of a mess, and they still need to find a number of solutions.
My 2-year-old daughter likes to do, like, puzzles, but doesn't quite get the idea of a puzzle. So sometimes she puts the pieces, like the big pieces, together correctly, and sometimes she just rams the wrong pieces together and then looks at me like, "Huh? I solved it?" And that's a little bit what Chelsea are right now. It's as Joe said, a shiny puzzle pieces into a shiny puzzle. But maybe it's Graham Potter just sort of like shoving two pieces together that don't fit and be like, "You know what? That'll do for now. It's solved. I'm good with it. Let's move on."
A nice $500 million puzzle. Wonderful. Times. You are listening to the Total Chelsea Show. We're going to take a quick break from Chelsea to talk about Man United for a moment. Val Weghorst, Taylor. Is he the prince
that was
promised?
Greatest signing of all time? Yeah, pretty much.
I think we might have mentioned this on the show before, but Erik ten Hag saying, you know, it's very important that we have high quality caliber of signings. We've seen signings maybe who shouldn't have been made at this club previously. Enter Val Weghorst.
Yes. I think a huge part of this deal is that Manchester United do not want to spend money and are not inclined to spend money and are definitely for sale. So I think with that, and we can talk more about that in the segment if we want, but I think with that in mind, this deal makes a lot more sense. Because in the end, I think they only ended up having to pay in total, £2.6 million of a loan fee, and that's basically to cancel the loan to Besiktas, so he'd go back to Burnley. Burnley, I think, only getting £100,000 in this deal. The rest goes to Besiktas, and then Manchester United taking him on loan. So a very minimal amount of money outlaid for a player who I think is going to do a variety of things for Erik ten Hag. I, because of the World Cup, because I wasn't as familiar with Weghorst, assumed he was basically just going to be a target man, that he adds you that sort of big guy in the box. If you're chasing a game late, you put him on there. He can be that guy to win aerial challenges, to kind of just like occupy attention, and then other players can make things happen. But then a lot of the coverage about him has been about how he is very good at pressing, how he works really hard, how he will work off the ball and drop in deeper to try to help win the ball. So then, going back and watching his footage, at least with Besiktas, that is what he does. He runs a lot. He works really hard. And so in that way, I think there is a little bit of familiarity with what Ten Hag wants to do. But then I think a lot of it is we're bringing in a player who isn't going to have the ego of the number 9/7 that he's replacing, and will do sort of the things that we need him to do, that we're happy to be on the bench and come in for 15 minutes but start a game here and there. And I think he ticks a lot of boxes for Erik Ten Hag. I don't know if he ends up being a Manchester United legend, but I think it will be a smart signing akin to when they signed Henrik Larsson for 6 months way back when.
I think there's a lot of logic behind this signing. I know there's a humorous element to it, given that Wout Weghorst is not going to be the Manchester United number nine that Ten Hag builds around. And there might be some listeners thinking I'm contradicting myself here, because I'm kind of skeptical of the Yao Felix deal, but I'm saying I like this deal. The difference is Yao Felix, it feels like he's been brought in to be a key part of that team, and then they're going to have to rip him out of that team. Wout Weghorst is not going to be, I mean, I think it's unlikely that he's going to be a key part of this Man United team. I think he's going to be a plan B. I think he's going to be someone who starts some games occasionally, but is largely coming off the bench to make a difference when Man United are looking for a solution. So that's the difference between the two signings. The issue that I do have is that this is a reflection of Man United's poor recruitment over a number of years. And in a way, they can't do anything about that now. This is the situation that they're in. They can't really do anything about it in this window. Anyway, I think they might be plotting some stuff for the summer, assuming that the ownership situation is sorted out by then. They need a body right now, and this is the body that they could get. And I think it's a relatively decent solution. But if you look back at the last few years, you can see how Man United have ended up in this situation. So it's been over 5 years since Man United last signed a striker under the age of 30. And in that time, Arsenal have signed Gabriel Jesus, Gabriel Martinelli and Aubameyang when he first got there. Chelsea have signed Lukaku, Havertz and Werner. Liverpool have signed Nunes, Gakpo and Jota. And City have signed Haaland, Alvarez and Ferran Torres. So Man United have put themselves in this position. As I say, there's not a great deal they can do about it now. Weghorst is pretty much as good as they can get in this window. But it is a reflection of how things have gone wrong over the last few years for Man United that this is the signing they're making right now.
Taylor, you mentioned he might not be a Man United legend. Picture this scenario. I'm going to place a scenario on your hands. Last day of the season, Man United, they need a goal to win the Premier League title. There's a free kick about 25 yards out. Wout Weghorst is he's on the edge of the box. What kind of free kick is taken here in this scenario? And how does it go?
The one that we saw for Argentina, the one that we saw him, I think he did the same thing for Wolfsburg.
He did.
Tells me that he is a set-piece master. We know he can sing. We've learned that from Graham Ruthven sharing that one with us. His goodbye celebration with Besiktas made me love him very, very much. So I think he's going to be an all-rounded talent that will score that set-piece with some masterful trickery. I'm definitely high on this one. A lot of it has to do with that goodbye celebration to the Besiktas fans. And how sweet that was, the sort of cupping the heart, the waving goodbye.
Enlighten me on this one, what happened?
He scores in his last game. Basically, I think he knows that he is going to be moving to Manchester United, even though it's not official at that point. He's playing for Besiktas. He scores a goal in front of their ultras and sort of stands there, like, arms out, like, kisses the badge, holds the badge, like, thumps it, waves goodbye, says goodbye, but then he's clearly kind of, like, overcome by emotion for a moment, does it again as he's being cheered, and then, like, hugs his teammates. So it's just, it's, like, a nice moment. It's a moment of appreciation. It's a moment, I think, of, like, humility a little bit. I think that's the big thing, is with Ronaldo at Manchester United, didn't feel like a lot of humility, felt like he was always kind of annoyed not to be playing, and there were those moments when Ten Hag would sub him on, and you could just tell that he wanted to score, not because it would help the team, but because it was like, see, you can't win without me, you can't score goals without me. And I think to Graham's point about Felix, he might make Chelsea better, he might be that really key player they need, but I also think he's a player that's coming in expecting to start every single game, and if he doesn't, that will be a source of some friction, whereas Weghorst, I don't think, is coming in thinking, I'm going to be the man at Manchester United. I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime move for him, he is set as such, so I think in that way, it's potentially makes a lot of sense. We'll see how it goes, because obviously the Burnley move was not all that successful for him, and that seems to be a thing that has been spotlighted. Was that an outlier, or is that
an
indicator
Burnley.
Of how he will be in the Premier League? I think
we really have to consider that he was playing for Burnley, a team that I believe finished 18th or was an 8th. I mean, regardless, like that is a difficult situation for anyone to thrive in. I think I generally agree with everything that's been said. I like this signing. It's not a flashy one. It's not a particularly attractive one. But, I mean, he scored 20 goals in the Bundesliga with Wolfsburg in 2020, 2021, 16 the year before that, 17 the year before that. This guy can put the ball in the back of the net. He does the stuff that Taylor, you and Graham have already talked about. I think it's a smart signing for a Manchester United team that is realistically looking to stabilize their position in the top four rather than compete for the title, as we talked about on the weekend review. Stabilizing a top four spot, to me, would be a hugely successful season. And Wout Weghorst, as silly as it kind of sounds, I think is a guy that helps you do that.
Before we move on from this one, I'd like to submit an application for a nickname for TSS for this player. Dub Dubs. Double
Dub Dubs.
Dub Dubs. Approved?
I like it.
I think that's almost the same number of syllables, but sure, why not?
Dub Dubs. Double W.
Yeah, Dub Dubs. Wout Weghorst. So, yeah, you're shortening it by one syllable, but yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, it's a time saver, as is this conversation about the nickname.
Dub Dubs. Yeah.
Dub-dubs.
I mean, he'll become Dubby Dubs. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
The dubbest of dubs. I'm going to keep going if you want. Just grind this show to a halt.
I'm going to take a break so you can riff on this one a little bit more. Right. When we come back, let's talk about some of the deals that are currently up in the air. Back shortly.
Dub-dubs.
Dub-dubs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Let's keep on going with our January transfer window special. Graham, it seems it is a biannual tradition that Declan Rice, West Ham have to protect Declan Rice from the suitors. For the past few years, this has been happening. Is it going to keep happening in this window?
In this window, yes. I don't think he's going to leave in January, but it does feel like there's been a shift in the landscape with regards to the reporting around Declan Rice's future. So it was reported by a number of outlets this week that Arsenal in particular are preparing to move for him in the summer transfer window. At that point, he will have just 1 year left on his contract at West Ham. So those same reports say that West Ham are, this time, they are pretty much resigned to losing him in the summer and actually will actively seek to sell him, because otherwise the next year he's not signing a new contract, so the next year they lose him for free. And that the number that's been reported is 70 million. That's for what West Ham are looking for Declan Rice. And Arsenal are apparently willing to pay that. And then on top of that, there were links with Manchester United. I saw some other outlets saying, yes, Arsenal are interested, and Manchester United are expected to be in the race as well. So I think this summer, not for this month, but this summer, it feels very much like Declan Rice will be on the move. I think during the World Cup, there was a press conference where he very openly said he wants to challenge for the top honours. He looks around in the England squad, he sees players playing for City and Liverpool and top clubs, and he wants to be at those top clubs. So that said to me that he is also ready to move on. I like Declan Rice as a player, and I think he's probably ready for a step up this summer. But I do have concerns about how quickly he moves the ball, whether that would hold him back for an Arteta or a Ten Hag team. So for United, I guess Rice would be a ball carrier. That is a feature of his game. But whenever I've watched Declan Rice, it feels like he needs wide open space to do that. He's a different sort of ball carrier to someone like Frenkie de Jong, for example, whom United have been linked with numerous times over the last year. Declan Rice is not going to beat two or three players in a tight space in the same way that Frenkie de Jong does regularly. So it feels like, yes, in quick transition, he is useful at starting attacks from deep. But for Manchester United, I don't know if he ticks every single box that they're looking for in that player. And then Arsenal, I think he strengthens that squad, but is he getting in that team at the moment ahead of Thomas Partey, who's in incredible form?
Yeah.
I don't think he is. So maybe that is Arsenal acting like a big club, quote-unquote, and saying, we're going to put £70 million on a depth option, which of course would be a statement of intent. But if Declan Rice is looking to play week in, week out for a top Premier League team that's going to be challenging for titles and trophies, I'm not sure Arsenal is the right place for him to go.
You don't think Declan Rice thinks, it doesn't matter whether this is true or not, but you don't think, Graham, that Declan Rice thinks that he's a better player than Thomas Partey? I do at least. I think
potentially.
I think if you're this level,
I don't know him that well.
I think fair enough. Yeah, Declan and I talk all the time.
He lives right by Ryan Street.
I think if you're Declan Rice, you are thinking, like, you are 100% believing in yourself to beat out Thomas Partey for a spot in midfield and to be the anchor that wins Arsenal the title this season. I'm not convinced, Graham, that he's going to move either. But I do think there's something in the point you made there about Arsenal acting like a big club. You know, we've talked several times on this show about how does Mudryk fit when they have Raheem Sterling? How does Declan Rice fit when they have Thomas Partey? The answer is, it doesn't really matter, right? If you're a big club, you need to be signing players to strengthen for when the player that you've been using goes down injured, right? Manchester City have stockpiled talent for years now. Liverpool have done that, although, you know, now we see that it was maybe a little thinner than we thought coming into this year. You need players who are like 1As and 1Bs, right? I think you don't always need 1, 2, 3, 4 down the depth chart. You need competition every week in training. You need some element of squad rotation. For me, when I see a team like Arsenal, reports around a team like Arsenal, or even Manchester United bidding for a player like Declan Rice, yeah, you can quibble about maybe the precise fit. And Graham, I think you make some good points there, some good qualifications and considerations about, you know, maybe Rice isn't the perfect option. But I do think these teams need to be ambitious if they want to solidify, for Arsenal, a title, and for Manchester United, a team that's currently inside the top four, which is better than a lot of folks thought they were going to do after the first two games of the season.
Taylor, it was always Chelsea, or for the past few windows, that Rice has been linked with. I'm not seeing that so much anymore.
Give it an hour or two. We'll see what they end up splashing out. Yeah.
They are throwing spaghetti at the wall. It feels like that could happen, right? I mean, I say a lot of that is because he has a good friendship with Mason Mount. Not to drop the name once again, but they do live very close to each other. They play golf regularly together. I know
he was at Chelsea as well. as a youth player,
yeah.
Declan Rice.
Yeah, so they're that, best buds, basically. History. And there's always been the notion that he would bring him on board or help to do that.
Not to toss the ball here, but I'm going to do that. Graham, like, for your concerns about him, do you think he would make that Chelsea midfield better? Because I think whoever thinks he would make them better would be wise to just go for him, maybe offer a little bit more than what West Ham are holding out for, because this summer seems like it's going to be the stage is set for every club with money to try to buy Jude Bellingham. That seems to be the one that everybody is saving up for, going to be spending some cash on. Liverpool interested, Real Madrid interested, Manchester United, Manchester City. And so Declan Rice, certainly not the same player, but it feels like a player who isn't necessarily overlooked, but I think if you are prioritizing strengthening your midfield, you go for him, spend the money you need to spend to secure him now so you don't have another bidding war when all the people going for Jude Bellingham sort of look around and think, well, we could use a holding midfielder, let's go for this guy instead. So would Declan Rice be a smart buy for Chelsea is my long-winded way of asking that question.
So you asked two different questions there. Your first one was, would he strengthen Chelsea's midfield? My answer to that is yes. Okay. Would he be a smart buy for Chelsea? I'm less sure of, because I don't think he, in terms of his profile, I don't think he's a true two-way midfielder in the way that Graham Potter looks for. He's not Moises Caicedo, right. He's not Yves Bissouma. He is an anchor, and he's a very good midfield anchor. So you're looking for a team, personally I'd be looking for a team that plays a midfield three. So I think Manchester United, had they not signed Casemiro, would probably be a good place for Declan Rice to go. But they did sign Casemiro, and now they need more of a ball carrier. And as I say, Rice, he can do that to a certain extent, but I think he's quite cumbersome in a lot of his actions. And so if you are a team that's trying to build around possession, then maybe he's not the perfect fit. Now, Joe and I have talked about how Ten Hag has been a little bit more pragmatic since he's moved to Manchester United, and they haven't been as possession-based as his Ajax team was. So maybe Ten Hag does have a plan in mind for Declan Rice that would become apparent. But for Arsenal, Manchester United, City, I think it's telling you never get any links with Manchester City. I don't think City are ever going to be interested in someone like Declan Rice. I think he has a limited player. He is good at what he does. I'm not trying to say he's not a good player. He's very good at what he does. But if I were to do a Football Manager style strengths and weaknesses, his list of strengths is actually quite a short one. It's just that those things on that list he is very good at.
Can we take a quick beat, Graham, on Arsenal's transfer window, which, to my knowledge, hasn't been super active in terms of getting pen to paper at the moment. But, you know, you can't stand still when you're in their position, right?
Yeah, and Joe referenced that this is the temptation for Arsenal. Is there even a couple short-term solutions that would give them depth in some key areas? So the really tempting one would be someone like Youri Tielemans, who it feels like he's quite desperate to move on from Leicester City. Leicester City, I was reading, actually need to raise some money. They're actively trying to ship out some players, I think. Soyuncu, who I know hasn't been in that team this season, but he's maybe going to Atletico Madrid in this window. So it feels like there might be a cut price deal to be done for Tielemans. Obviously, he's a high quality midfielder. Does he start over Partey or Xhaka at the moment? I don't think he does, but you bring him in as depth, because I've spoken previously about how in those central midfield positions, Arsenal don't have a great deal of depth. With regards to the attacking options, I think medium to long term, Arsenal certainly need to build out their squad depth there. So at the moment, they have Martinelli, Jesus, who's obviously out injured at the moment, Saka and Nketiah for three positions. That's it. That's all the players that have played in those three positions this season. Martinelli and Saka have started 18 out of 18 league games that Arsenal have played this season. So that is a concern for them. Even if those two players, Martinelli and Saka I'm talking about, even if they avoid injuries for the full season or don't have suspensions, that's a lot of soccer that they're having to play over the course of the season. Smith Rowe is an option when he's fit again and ready to feature, but he's more comfortable in a central position. You could actually argue that in the time he's been out, Arteta has evolved Arsenal away from having a player in his position. There's not really a player. I mean, Odegaard does the hybrid role of being a central midfielder and pushing up in behind the central striker and making those late runs. So I guess Smith Rowe is a depth option behind Odegaard, but in the wide position, he's not so great in the right. He can play in the left. It's not his natural position. So there are questions for Arsenal to answer there in terms of their depth. I know Rafinha has been mentioned as a potential option. I don't know what it says about Barcelona's recruitment, that they're apparently ready to offload him just 6 months after signing him for €65 million when he was meant to be a major part of this new team. He might be a good option for Arsenal, but I don't see him as a perfect alternative to Mudryk, given he's more about having touches on the ball and cutting inside, yeah. whereas Mudrik is all about being a bit more of a road runner. So I'm not saying Rafinha wouldn't be a good addition to this Arsenal squad. He's just not really the Mudrik alternative.
Rafinha is more, from what I've seen of him, more east-west, and Mudrik is more north-south, I think is what you're getting at there, Graham. Mudrik is somebody who's really going to exploit space in behind quickly, and Rafinha will do that stuff, but he'll hang super wide and then cut in. I think Rafinha would be a really good signing for Arsenal because I think he's a phenomenal player. I would be surprised if he left Barcelona, although Barcelona are the chaos circus, so you never know at this point. Rafinha hasn't been a regular starter for Xavi, but he has been a regular player. He's appeared in most of their games so far this season, has started a number as well. One name that I've seen linked with Arsenal is Moussa Diaby, who plays for Bayer Leverkusen, young French winger, 23, I believe, left-footed. I think is a really, really good option for them out wide. It seems like the price tag is going to be high. Maybe from what I've seen, it looks like we're talking $100 million, which is basically what Arsenal were going to have to pay for Mudrik. Now, the reason why I think that's a slightly more palatable fee for Diaby than it is for Mudrik is there is a world of difference between the Ukrainian Premier League and between the Bundesliga. You know, the bet with Mudrik is still that he's going to grow into the player that you're paying for. Diaby, there's a little bit of growth left to be done, and you are going to overpay in the winter if Arsenal are going to make this move. But, I mean, you already have a much clearer idea of who this guy is. You've seen him with France. You've seen him with their youth setup. You've seen him with Bayer Leverkusen scoring 10-plus goals in the Bundesliga. I mean, there's a lot to like about Diaby. I don't know if they'll pull the trigger. I think in another world, guys, in another world for Arsenal, a Christian Pulisic loan move in this window would have been absolutely perfect. I think it would have been perfect for Chelsea. Get him out of there. I think it would have been perfect for Christian Pulisic. Get him out of there. And I think it would have been perfect for Arsenal because they need depth out wide. He's not starting over Saka. He's not starting over Martinelli. I think Pulisic, I'm sort of contradicting myself with Declan Rice. I think Pulisic is smart enough to know what his role was going to be, but he'd still play more at Arsenal than he would at Chelsea. So I think that would have been the ideal move, either a loan or maybe a cut-rate permanent deal if they could have gotten that move done. But Pulisic's injury, of course, preventing him from making a move anywhere in this window, Arsenal are going to have to look elsewhere.
That's a really great shout, Joe. I'm sad he is injured because that would be really fun. With Moussa Diaby, I think an interesting thing, well, there's two things for me. The first is that it sounds to me like with Mudrik, Arsenal thought they had identified a sort of diamond in the rough that maybe a few other people knew was a diamond, but they thought they could get him for cheap. That's why their opening bid, I think, was 60. Even with Shakhtar valuing him as they did, I think they thought we can get him for less than they're asking because we've sort of spotted this talent. We've scouted him pretty extensively. We know what he's going to bring, and that's why I think they were offering lower and lower amounts. Then their hand is forced, and now, I think they went up to like 95 or whatever it was. So I think at that point, to lose Mudrik and then to be linked with Diaby and then have Leverkusen basically say, well, we know you can afford 95 million, so 95 million, please. That's where I think Arsenal are in a little bit of trouble because they've publicly shown we've got money. And so now even when you're going for your second choice option, who plays in a stronger league, plays for a stronger club, and maybe is more inclined to move, you are still going to have to splash some cash to make that one happen. It's a tricky situation, though we're talking about a Premier League club having to spend 90 million, all you poor lambs. So not that much sympathy, I guess, for me.
Another Bundesliga attacker that I'm surprised, I did do a quick Google there, and he has very tangentially been linked with Arsenal, but I'm surprised there haven't been stronger links given his contract situation, is Marcus Thuram, who is out of contract at the end of the season. Apparently he's available for between 10 and 15 million euros. Now, he's not the Mudrik alternative either, but in terms of just bulking up that attack with a player who's still only 25, so it's not a short-term solution. You'll get a good few years out of him. I think there is the potential for him to play as a centre forward as well. So if Gabriel Jesus is out injured for a long time, if Eddie Nketiah gets a suspension or he picks up an injury, then you can shift Marcus Thuram into the middle, or you can have him on the left and have Martinelli through the middle through the centre forward position. I'm surprised there hasn't been more chat about Marcus Thuram because, as I say, he's out of contract at the end of the season. Yeah. He had a decent World Cup as well, and it doesn't feel like there's a great deal of speculation around him right now.
Graham, that's one. I share your concern about that one or confusion about that one because if you're spending 2.6 million for Valt Weghorst, double dubs. What am I going with, Ryan?
Dub dubs.
Dub dubs, excuse me. Like, 10 to 15 million for Marcus Thuram feels like maybe a doable transaction if you're Manchester United to have him come in, play striker, but do the defensive work. And I think that, again, shows just how much Manchester United are trying to make themselves a buildable asset. That, like, there's nobody in this squad. You can sign whoever you want. I mean, they've got plenty of players. But I think, again, that reveals how little money they want to spend for a player of his quality. I think he would make a lot of teams better. So, too, would maybe Memphis, who I think at time of recording is sitting out training for Barcelona, is refusing to play there. So maybe he gets a
while
move.
We've been recording, Romano has reported he's off to Atleti. It's done.
There we go. So. Never mind.
That's where
he's going. See? It's the TSS bump right there.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Taylor, can we do a little beat on Leeds as well?
Yes, please.
With Georginio Rutter coming in.
Love him.
They're going to be rutting their way up the league now. Mm? Yeah? Yeah?
So right. How long did you work on that one, Ryan?
Seconds, Joe. Literally seconds.
No, okay.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, it doesn't show at all.
Much like our friend Jeff, I believe I've learned, at least from the German commentators, that it is Rutter. So there's that little wrinkle for you. Jorginho Rutter, France.
Oh, he's French, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. French U21, 11 Bundesliga goals, and he completes a move for a club record fee. I knew nothing about him before I started watching footage of him, and man, do I think he is the perfect signing for Leeds. I really think he is going to be a smash hit from, if not his first game, very, very quickly. I think it was, what, £30 million? This feels like a player who a year from now, or like 18 months from now, will be sold for $60 or $70 million. I think he is very, very good for a couple of different reasons. Number one, a little thing. I don't know why it's my number one, but it is. He has Go-Go Gadget legs, the Inspector Gadget legs, that somehow extend just a little bit further than you think they will. He's not the tallest guy, but he always gets to these loose balls that you don't think he's going to get to. So much so that he gets to them and then draws a foul. I saw him draw so many fouls by getting to a 50-50 ball first when a defender didn't think he would. So he's going to be that player who hustles, wins fouls, gives Leeds set-piece opportunities in and around goal. But he is also very strong, can hold the ball up well, works really hard to win the ball back. He covers a ton of ground. It's good with his head. He can hit with his left. I saw him score a couple from distance, but also some good directional headers as well. And just the work rate is there. He likes to play vertically. He likes to drop and win the ball off of a midfielder who doesn't see him making that defensive run and then turns and sprints forward for the vertical sort of counterattack. I just think he ticks a ton of boxes. I think this is a really smart signing by Leeds.
Does he tick the goals box, Taylor? And that I looked very quickly. He's not a player that I'm terribly familiar with. I've watched some footage like you. But just going on his, you know, his binary numbers and looking at how many goals he scored, with Leeds, it felt like they needed a goal scorer. They've really needed that player since they've gone up to the Premier League. And I know you could say that about pretty much every team in the bottom half of that table right now. But is he going to be that player? Is he going to get 10 goals in the second half of the season?
So he has 11 for Hoffenheim in two seasons. So it's a good question. I think the majority of those 11 have come this past season. I think if... To me, he seems like a player who has done a number of different things for Hoffenheim. And you move him to Leeds, if you put him as that central forward and you give him the opportunity, yeah, I think he'll take his chances. I think, as I said, really good in the air, like the directional header thing. It's not the smash header. It's not just getting there the poacher style, but it's little flicks. It's putting it where you think he's going to go back across goal. He puts it to the far side netting. So I think he can help in the air, but then I think can create on his own, can be there to finish well. I think that's a fair concern to have, Graham. I think that will be the interesting thing is, are you moving him into one of those situations where everything clicks and we see him sort of raise his game? A good friend of mine, Joe, different Joe, I have multiple Joes in my life, pointed out that there is usually that sort of learning curve when you have a strong but young attacker moving from the Bundesliga to the Premier League. And so, as I said, I think he will hit the ground running. But there is always that wrinkle of, does it take him sort of 3 months, 6 months to truly find his footing? That's not a luxury I think Leeds can afford. So if he scores in his first couple games, I think that gives us an indicator of how well he's fitting in.
Yeah, I think it's a good signing from Leeds. I share Graham's. I don't know if Graham is concerned about it or if you're just asking questions. I am a little bit concerned about his ability to put the ball in the back of the net. He scored 8 goals in 1,600 minutes in the Bundesliga last year, which is a really good tally as a 19-year-old. That is, I think that's a fantastic number. He hasn't been as prolific this season, and Leeds United are a weird team. They don't play the same as Hoffenheim. There's going to be a stylistic adjustment. Like, They are as far at one end of the extreme, at one end of the spectrum as you can possibly get in terms of soccer style. So that is going to be weird. The Premier League is just a higher quality league at this point than the Bundesliga, so there is that to consider. I think it could be a really good move. I'm just not as confident one way or the other as Taylor is right now. I just think, generally speaking, Leeds need more. Still, they signed Vober, I don't know if I pronounced that right, from RB Salzburg, defender. Taylor, you talked about him as a very Red Bull kind of player, very Leeds United kind of player. I don't know if he's going to be a starter on the fullback spots or starter in the middle, because he's played both of those spots for Salzburg. And then Luis Sinisterra is working his way back from injury. He was signed in the summer, played a bit, but almost a new signing there. So hopefully that helps Leeds out wide. He's a winger they signed from the Eredivisie. But I think they need more. I mean, Leeds are 2 points outside of the relegation zone right now. They have a game in hand, but that is not a big margin. They're giving up far too many chances. They don't have the defensive depth or the attacking difference makers they need. And maybe Ruter is that player. I think they're basically banking on him, and maybe Brendan Aaronson finding form and Sinisterra getting back to health and really playing well. They don't have the depth, though, right now that I think they need to be a surefire team that's staying up. Onahi, I think, would make a big difference for this club. I think he'd be a fantastic signing. Leeds have been linked. I would be a little surprised if they pull off that deal, because there are other bigger clubs that have been in for him, or at least clubs that have spent more money on transfers recently. You've got Marseille and Napoli and maybe even Leicester reportedly interested. But I want to see Ruter make an impact soon, and I want to see them, for Leeds United's sake, I want to see them maybe make one more strong signing at the base of midfield, somewhere in midfield, or maybe further back.
Joe, I'm not always a big fan of a manager moving to a new club and then bringing like the one or two best players from that club with him. Brendan Rodgers, I think, did that when he moved to Liverpool. It happens all the time. This might be the exception. I'm wondering what your thoughts are, Graham. Same for you. Like, if you're Jesse Marsh, if you're Leeds, would you look at like any of the Salzburg players that you coached or that are still at Salzburg, or maybe a few of the Leipzig players, and just bring in some of the players that maybe you can get for a bargain, you can get for cheaper amounts, but you know they're familiar with the way you want to play, they know they're familiar with the style, it's going to be an easier betting in, even if technically they're not at the level, even if they can't sort of maybe hang with creating opportunities in the Premier League, at the very least they can bet in and help your team sort of continue to function, give you those depth options. Would that be a way that Leeds could be good, or do you just run the risk of bringing in like suboptimal players and then you have a suboptimal team that gets relegated?
That is a risk, but I think when you're looking for short-term results, that is something that can work. I mean, Taylor, your own team has done that to great effect this season. Erik ten Hag, going back to Ajax, he recognised he needed players that could immediately come in and understand his methods and ideas, and maybe that's not a long-term plan. I would suggest for Man United that shouldn't be a long-term plan.
Just but keep raiding Ajax. It works for a lot of clubs. Why not?
Well, yes, Barcelona's whole identity as a club, just raid Ajax. But, you're joking there about raiding Ajax, but Ajax is a good source of talent. Mm-hmm. I would say the same thing about Salzburg. It's not like you'd be raiding a club that doesn't have a track record of producing young players. I mean, you say you could end up with suboptimal players. I mean, are there many of those at Salzburg? It seems like they're pretty effective finishing schools for sending players to the Bundesliga and to the Premier League. So I can think of worse strategies, particularly with Leeds at the moment. I've read a lot of from Phil Hay, who's the Leeds reporter for The Athletic. He's very good. He has reported about the strategical issues that Leeds have had. A lot of it is related to money and how they're struggling with really being a Premier League club with a championship budget. And so there has been a lot of upheaval in their scouting department and recruitment department. So until those things sort of straighten out, I think there's a worse strategy than basically just raiding Salzburg for players.
All right, guys, we're nearly at time here. If we could just maybe focus on a couple of interesting rumours out there. Graham, one I wanted to talk about was Pedro Porro, who does seem to have been a Spurs target, now a Chelsea target, of course, and maybe a few other clubs as well. But it seems that with Spurs, they've been going, we want to give you slightly less money than you want. And Sporting go, we want the money that we've asked for. And that's the whole conversation.
That's been happening for 2-3 months, it seems like, with Pedro Porro. I think Sporting want somewhere in the region of 45 million euros. Yeah. Spurs are holding out for paying around 30 million euros, and we've been there for a long time. I've watched a bit of Pedro Porro. I have mixed thoughts. I think in an attacking sense, yes, he is very useful. Defensively, I think he is a flawed player. And I saw, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, it was someone of an analytical background, but basically saying he is super Matt Doherty, which is an upgrade for Spurs on real Matt Doherty. But is he the player that's going to really propel you into top four contention? Maybe not. So there might be better options out there. I actually think the best solution for everyone here is Pedro Porro goes to Chelsea and is the deputy option for, is the depth option behind Reece James.
They do need more wingers, and then, so let's make that happen.
Denzel Dumfries, who's been linked with Chelsea, who maybe doesn't want to be the depth option behind Reece James, goes to Spurs, where he will be a first-team player under Antonio Conte. Who did Conte coach Dumfries at Inter?
Or was that Hakimi?
I felt like he joined afterwards because Hakimi was there. Anyway, scrub that link. It doesn't exist. Nonetheless, I think he would be a very good signing for Tottenham.
All right, then. Any other deals anyone wants to talk about, Tavesta?
It's not one I want to talk about. I want to hear Joe's thoughts on Duran to Aston Villa, because that feels like it should be massive news, and maybe it is. Maybe we just haven't been able to talk about it. Yeah, Duran, of course.
Yeah, it's been big news in MLS circles, the third highest, or could be the third highest outgoing transfer fee in MLS history, behind two pretty good players in Alphonso Davies, who is a superstar for Bayern Munich, and Miguel Almirón, who is having the best season of his life for Newcastle United in the Premier League. Duran moving for, I believe the reported fee was $18 million at a base fee, but could rise up to $22 million, depending on different incentives and add-ons. That's a lot of money for Chicago, who sold Gaga Slonina to Chelsea for, I believe, $15 million. The most expensive goalkeeper to ever leave MLS, and now they sell young Colombian striker, who I think is a really good player, for 18 to 20, 22 million, somewhere in that range. It's a great bit of business by Chicago to sell right before the bubble bursts, if it's going to burst, and these things do happen. It's not a guaranteed hit for Aston Villa, but it is a massive number for them. So well done to Chicago here, and well done to Duran, who I think, like I said, I think is a good player. He's still young, though. I think he's 19 years old. There is so much more room for him to grow, but he's a lanky striker. Can run into the channels, can run in behind, very skilled, good finisher. I mean, he does a lot of things very, very well. I don't think he's going to be an impact player on day one in the Premier League, but I think over, you know, the rest of this season, we'll start to see him play more. And then into next season, he could become something of a revelation. Could is the operative word, though. Again, very, very young.
Joe, is he hungry like the wolf? Does he have a good reflex?
Something about Rio. We can add these in here, right?
Oh, you got it!
Yeah, look at you. Just shocked by that one.
Look at you go!
That is an astounding moment.
My work here is done.
I think our work here is done, actually, guys. Excellent January transfer roundup. We should get at least a couple more of these in before the window is up. But for now, Joe Lowry, Duran fan extraordinaire. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ryan. Thank you.
Taylor Rockwell, pleasure as always, my good sir.
Oh, man, the pleasure was mine. That's good stuff, fellas. That's good stuff.
Indeed. Graham Ruthven, keep on trucking, baby.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey. You too.
And listener, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back on the feed very shortly, but for now, bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.